This 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting battlefield gains in Syria. Syrian forces recaptured the town of Rabia Sunday, adding to previous victories over rebels in the crucial northwest province of Latakia. Rabia is about 10 kilometers south of the Turkish border, one of more than a dozen areas the government says its fighters took control of in recent days. Middle East analyst Alam Payen calls it an important advancement for the coalition backing Damascus.
Anything which can take some of these cities which are on the supply routes, it's extremely important militarily and also psychologically for the ISIL forces, and also it somehow boosts the morale of the Syrian army and the Kurdish Peshmerga, because Turks are also very much interested in the defeat of the Daesh or the ISIL. So this is an important development.
The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which monitors violence in the country, said the probe government troops were backed by Russian airstrikes and strategic help from Russian military officers. In the east, the observatory said Sunday airstrikes by Russian and Syrian warplanes killed more than 160 in the past 3 days in Deir ez-Zor. The observatory also says more than 40 fatalities occurred from Russian and Syrian strikes in Raqqa in the north. The Burkinabe government announced Sunday it's arrested several members of the dissolved presidential guard for their alleged involvement in Friday's attack on an armory in the capital, Ouagadougou. The country is still grappling in the aftermath of an attack on a hotel and restaurant earlier this month, claimed by Islamist militants that left some 30 people dead. Authorities had already arrested 11 members of the disbanded presidential guard following that Friday raid. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Laos today at the start of the Asia leg of his global tour that's already taken him to Switzerland and Saudi Arabia. Regional analyst Malcolm Cook in Singapore calls the stop in Laos a rare visit by a U.S. diplomat.
Laos, as with Cambodia, also a country Secretary Kerry's visiting, have a history tied to the Vietnam War. I think Laos was the second largest victim of U.S. bombing. Why Secretary Kerry is visiting Laos now, the second Secretary of State to do that since 1955, is because Laos is this year's chair country for ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. So it's more a regional visit than a bilateral one.
Mr. Kerry expected to discuss an upcoming February summit with leaders of the 10 ASEAN member countries to be hosted by President Obama in California. Thousands of demonstrators converged on the Moldovan capital Sunday, protesting the newly appointed government and prime minister in Europe's poorest nation. Chanting, "We are the people and we want our country back," protesters in Chisinau braved temperatures of minus 10 degrees Celsius to demand snap elections. The country has been mired in political gridlock. Parliament appointed Pavel Philippe as prime minister. The opposition accuses him of having close ties to the country's elite, blame for its poor governance. Brazilian officials have announced measures to prevent the spread of the Zika virus during the upcoming Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games. Organizers say that venues used at the Olympics in August will be inspected daily during game times in a bid to prevent the spread of the mosquito-borne virus that has been linked to a rare birth defect and also a condition that can cause paralysis. A massive winter storm left in the U.S. northeast dumped some 1 meter or more of snow across parts of that area, paralyzing entire cities, including Washington and New York, bringing public transport and many airports to a standstill and leaving at least 24 dead. The federal government has closed operations for Monday. Jack Boston is a senior meteorologist with AccuWeather.
In New York City, for example, at Central Park, only missed the all-time record for one storm by 2 centimeters. The total snowfall in New York City was 68 centimeters. The record is 70 centimeters.
Coastal areas from Virginia to New Jersey experienced flooding from the storm. Up to 85 million people were impacted in some way. A powerful earthquake with a magnitude of 7.1 hit the far northwest U.S. state of Alaska early Sunday, causing no major damage and no reported injuries. Unidentified attackers killed a policeman and 4 others in Yemen's port city Aden on Sunday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 25th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan rebel leader meets President Museveni today, Monday, on hindrance to peace implementation.
Our position on the 28th state is that this is a violation of the agreement. And since it is a violation and it is inconsistent with the agreement, we have nothing to do with it.
Riek Machar is former South Sudan vice president and currently rebel leader. The South Sudan government says President Kiir's 28th state creation improves the August peace agreement. The return of Ivory Coast refugees sparks land title disputes, and Africa demands veto power in the UN Security Council.
On the eve of the meeting of the African Union, he saw it fit to meet to discuss what our position is regarding the issue of the reform of the UN Security Council and our position as Africa.
That's correspondent Sebastian Mofu interpreting President Robert Mugabe's comment after his meeting in Harare with Equatoria's president. A mobile platform helps poor Kenyans get health care, and El Nino puts the health of 60 million people at risk. Those stories plus Marco Woman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar says he will ask Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni to tell President Salva Kiir to scrap his decision to create 28 states because it is hindering the implementation of the peace agreement. The Ugandan leader is an influential member of the East African regional bloc known as IGA, which played a key role in mediating last August peace agreement. Machar is scheduled to meet with President Museveni today, Monday. The meeting comes as both sides have missed Saturday's deadline to form a national unity government. Machar says the rebels first want to amend the current transitional constitution to incorporate last August peace agreement, which recognizes 10 states. But he said the South Sudan government wants President Kiir's 28 states be enshrined in the new constitution.
Our position on the 28 states is that this is a violation of the agreement. And since it is a violation and it is inconsistent with the agreement, we have nothing to do with it. The main problem is that the government is refusing to agree with us in the incorporation of the agreement to the transitional constitution so that the number of states is mentioned as 10, like it is now in the transitional agreement. So we think the 28 states declaration is an obstacle to the process of getting a constitution so that we can form a transitional government of national unity.
How is this issue going to be resolved?
Well, as I told you, you cannot form a transitional government of national unity without a constitution. You know that even if you want to establish a company, you must have rules for establishing such a company. So the same with establishing a government, you need to have a constitution. In this case, we need to amend the current transitional constitution so that it incorporates the agreement. The disagreement is that the government insists that the 28 states, which they established 39 days after the agreement was signed, they insist that these 38 states be enshrined in the constitution. But the agreement says 10 states only.
So you are scheduled to meet with Ugandan President Museveni. The meeting is on Monday. What are you going to tell him?
You know, President Museveni has been instrumental in persuading President Kiir to sign the agreement, which President Kiir did on the 26th of August, 9 days late. I think it is time for President Yoweri Museveni to exercise his influence on President Kiir so that President Kiir drops the 28 states and we go forward so that we can forge a constitution. And then once passed by the Transitional National Assembly, then a government can be established. What I'm going to do is appeal to President Museveni to assist us so that voice of reason is brought back.
So your group will stick by the peace agreement, but only with 10 states and not 28 states.
That is true. We'll stick by the agreement because if we change If we violate the agreement, we will be counted guilty like the government.
Dr. Machar, thank you very much again. Safe trip.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Riek Machar is former South Sudan vice president and currently rebel leader. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa Airport en route to Kampala, Uganda. South Sudan's information minister says President Salva Kiir's creation of 28 states does not hinder the implementation of last August peace agreement. Michael McQueen says the 28 states creation is an improvement of the peace deal because it gives the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, in opposition, six governors instead of three and 40% in 10 states instead of 40% in three states. In addition, Michael McQueen says the 28 states idea is popular with South Sudanese, and if the rebels want, the government is willing to provide funding to put the idea to a national referendum. Mr. McQueen joins us now from Juba. Good morning, Mr. Minister.
Good morning, and good morning to all the listeners of VOA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. We are happy to always have you on Daybreak Africa. The rebels led by Dr. Machar have said your government is hindering the peace process by your creation of 28 states. They are willing to stick by the August agreement, but not with 28 states.
Well, this is very unfortunate statement given by the expected first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan. The issue of the 28 states, our position as a government is that the current delegation that came to South Sudan is inclusive of 21 delegations for the 21 states established by the SPLM-AIO, and we have the list. Now they come up and say, you are in violation of the agreement, and meanwhile they are sending 21 delegations to the 21 states which they had established. So our position is this. Our position has been that we, as the government of South Sudan, we are not here to renegotiate, but let us sit down and resolve this situation. By the way, this was a popular demand by the people of South Sudan. And this is the most appreciated decision ever taken by the president in response to the demand of the people of South Sudan. So there is no way the president would come today and say, I'm revoking it, because this was a popular demand.
Mr. Minister, the rebels have said that when they came up with the idea of 21 states, it was before the August agreement was signed. You came up with 28 states after the August agreement was signed. So they are saying you are in violation of the August agreement.
No, I don't agree with what they are saying, because when they decided to send us the list of their advance team, within the advance team there was a list of 21 delegates going to their 21 states. And we have the list. So that is a misleading information.
So where do we go? Is there a compromise to accept something between 21 and 28 where the two sides can agree?
In fact, there is no problem. It is only the SPLM-AIO which is trying to make a case out of nothing. Because if you go to the agreement, you will find that what we have done is even an improvement to the agreement. It is not a violation. And it is an improvement to their interests, even.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. It's so nice to always have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you for joining us again.
Okay, thank you very much, and good morning to everybody.
Michael McQueen is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Today's Monday, January 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe and Equatorial Guinea's President Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo say Africa wants to see reforms enacted at the UN Security Council, and they want the continent to be given at least one spot as a permanent member. The call came at the end of a visit to Zimbabwe by Nguema and ahead of an African Union General Assembly later this month. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
Mugabe, who is handing over the rotating AU chairmanship, said his Equatorial Guinea counterpart, Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, was in Zimbabwe because of the upcoming African summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
So on the eve of the meeting of the African Union.
On the eve of the meeting of the African Union, you saw it fit to meet to discuss what our position is regarding various matters. The issue of the reform of the UN Security Council and our position as Africa. Then the issue of peace and security in Africa and terrorism. Nguema said there was a need for African leaders to translate political independence to economic independence. He said Africa's leaders must work today to ensure that this becomes a reality. On the issue of the UN Security Council, Nguema said reforms should be taken seriously. Concerning the reforms of the United Nations Security Council, which Africa is gunning for, we are asking for 2 seats of the Security Council of the United Nations. But if we are not given 2, at least be given 1 with full recognition of members with the right to veto. I think that is the revolution which Africa looks for. Russia, Britain, China, France and the United States are the permanent members of the UN Security Council. Now Africa, as a continent, wants to be represented in that powerful UN group. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The 2010-2011 political crisis in Ivory Coast forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee to neighboring countries. Most of them left everything behind. But when they returned, some found their land occupied by strangers, leading to clashes and intercommunal tensions. With more refugees still on their way back, the conflict threatens to impede the reconciliation the country has been trying to bring about. Emily Job reports.
In this region of Ivory Coast bordering Liberia, lush forest spreads as far as the eye can see. It is one of the most fertile regions in the country, but also one of the most heavily impacted by the political crisis after the 2010 presidential election. Post-election violence led about 300,000 people to flee the country, leaving everything behind. Many of them came from here and fled to Liberia. One refugee was Leontine Mea, who made a living by cultivating her ancestral land. She came back after 2 years in a refugee camp.
When I came back, I went to see my land, and I saw that distant relatives had sold my land and that other people were occupying it.
Land dispute is not new in Ivory Coast. In some areas, it dates back to the 1980s, but it has blown up in the past few years with the return of the 2010-2011 refugees. In some cases, community members or relatives claimed a right to the land while the refugee was gone and sold it illegally, often to foreigners, leading to serious tension when the landowner came home. The United Nations Refugee Agency, which is helping the returnees readjust, also advises them on the legal procedure to recover the land.
It's happening a lot. It's one of the main issues that we are facing. So we have put in place a mechanism whereby we can follow we call it protection monitoring. You cannot have social cohesion when people don't get the rights to be reinstated.
Joël Gueye also saw his land taken away, but he managed to find a solution thanks to the mediation of the local chief.
We went to see the chief of the village and he proposed that we do share work. We thought about it and eventually agreed.
Settlements are not always so easy to achieve because most people don't have a land certificate and land boundaries are often blurry. Local authorities, such as the prefectures, are also involved in solving cases.
The state has issued a decree regarding the boundaries of village territories. The state is due to finance it. And I believe that if this operation goes through, it will really decrease the number of conflicts, not only here, but in the whole of Ivory Coast as well.
The stakes in Ivory Coast are high as repatriation of the remaining refugees from Liberia resumed in December, and several thousands are expected to come home in the next few months. Emilia Provia News in Blodecan.
In Kenya, an IT platform is helping low-income earners get the kind of affordable health insurance that was once only available to the middle class and the affluent. It is giving residents in the Nairobi slum of Kibera access to much-needed health care through their mobile devices. As Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi, 10,000 Kibera residents are so far using this technology.
It's early in the morning in Kibera, and Winnie Manga is preparing to go to work. The mother of six has a tailoring business where she makes about $30 a month, barely enough to meet her basic needs. But a mobile device known as M-Tiba allows Manga to save a dollar a month for healthcare. She downloads an app on her phone that sets up a savings account she uses to pay her health costs. She says this has enabled her family to get medical treatment that was once viewed as a luxury.
It helps a lot in the local health facilities around here, but in big hospitals, the charges are exorbitant and one can't afford it. When my grandson was sick, I would have been charged quite a lot, but since I had been saving for a while, I got the medicines at a reduced price, and they were quality drugs, too.
The so-called M-Tiba mobile health wallet allows registered users to save money for healthcare services at various registered clinics for an affordable cost. Dr. Stanley Simiu has been treating patients at his clinic for 4 years. He says since the adoption of the platform, more Kibera residents are coming to the clinic, though he acknowledges there are some limitations.
Sometimes patients could come and they don't have enough money in the wallet, and that calls for a top-up for them. And also some of the patients could walk in and they're not able actually to use the cell phone well. So you have to get in and start training them again on how to.
M-Tiba partnered with CarePay and PharmAccess to develop the health wallet. And so far, 10,000 people are using the technology. Keys Van Led of M-Tiba says access to healthcare is a right for all.
We want to make healthcare truly inclusive for all Kenyans. Right now in Kenya, only 2% of the population has comprehensive health insurance. More than 1 million Kenyans end up in poverty every year because of health-related expenses, and we want to stop that.
Some 2,000 health facilities nationwide have signed on to M-Tiba's health wallet program. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
The World Health Organization says the health and well-being of an estimated 60 million people worldwide are likely to be affected by the El Niño weather phenomena this year. The WHO says people in the tropics will be most seriously affected by extreme changes in temperatures and rainfall patterns. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
El Niño, which emerged toward the end of last year, is expected to peak this month and then begin to wind down through March and April. But the World Health Organization warns the health consequences will likely worsen as the full effects of El Niño are felt throughout 2016. El Niño is defined by unusually warm ocean temperatures in the central and eastern equatorial Pacific. It produces extreme drought and acute water shortages, as well as heavy rainfall and flooding in different parts of the world. People in the Horn of Africa, southern and eastern Africa, South Pacific, Central America, and South Asia will likely suffer most from these extreme weather conditions. The WHO says seven countries, Tanzania, Kenya, Chad, Somalia, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Peru, are most at risk. The WHO's Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response, Rick Brennan, says the health impacts from El Niño are significant.
So we have a broad range of potential impacts, from malnutrition to infectious diseases to disruptions of health services. And again, it's the most vulnerable. It's the poorest countries, it's the elderly, it's the children that are most impacted.
Brennan says drought associated with El Niño can result in high levels of malnutrition and lead to death among children. He says acute water shortages can disrupt sanitation and hygiene services, causing infections such as diarrheal disease and scabies. On the other hand, he says heavy rains can increase the risk of diseases such as malaria and dengue. He says flooding can kill and injure people, as well as damage and disrupt vital infrastructure. Brennan says countries can take a number of steps to prepare for El Niño and limit its health consequences. These include disease control measures such as vaccinating malnourished children against measles. He says countries should increase hygiene services to control infectious diseases and prevent the spread of malaria, dengue, and other diseases. He says surveillance systems to detect disease outbreaks early should be scaled up so quick action can be taken to contain them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Morocco stand hosts Rwanda 4-1 in the capital, Kigali, as Ivory Coast dismissed Gabon 4-1 in Butare, some 140 kilometers south of Kigali, as Group A action concluded at the Orange African Nations Championship in Rwanda on Sunday. Rwanda and Ivory Coast advanced to the quarterfinals. Earlier on Saturday, Zambia pipped Uganda 1-0 as Mali edged Zimbabwe by a solitary goal in Group D action at the Umganda Stadium in Gishenyi. Zambia has 6 points and qualify for the quarterfinals with a game in hand. Mali has 3 points, Uganda 1, while Zimbabwe have no point. On Friday, Niger and Guinea drew 2-2 as Tunisia and Nigeria played a 1-1 draw in Group C action at the Nyamiramba Stadium in Kigali. Nigeria topped the group with 4 points. Guinea and Tunisia are tied on 2 points each, while Niger has 1 point. Today, Monday, Group B action concludes with Ethiopia playing Angola at the Amahoro National Stadium in Kigali, and Cameroon face the Democratic Republic of Congo at the Huye Stadium in Butare. The Congolese lead the group with 6 points. Cameroon has 4, Ethiopia 1, while Angola has no point. Turning to handball, defending champions Algeria outplayed Morocco 27-22, hosts Egypt beat Cameroon 30-20, as Nigeria pipped Gabon 31-30 in Group A action at the Africa Men's Handball Championships in Cairo on Saturday. In Group B, Tunisia outclassed Kenya 53-15, in Angola edged the Republic of Congo 28-26, and the Democratic Republic of Congo pipped Libya 20-19. Earlier on Friday, Algeria dismissed Gabon 35-24, Morocco edged Cameroon 26-24, and Egypt outplayed Nigeria 34-20. The Republic of Congo dismissed Kenya 34-19, Angola beat Libya 29-15, and Tunisia outplayed the Democratic Republic of Congo 37-22. Today, Monday, Cameroon challenge Algeria, Morocco face Nigeria, and Egypt tackle Gabon. Angola engage the Democratic Republic of Congo. Kenya play Libya, while the Republic of Congo challenge Tunisia. Finally, in athletics, Ethiopians Tesfaye Dibaba Abera ran a lifetime best of 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 24 seconds, as Tirfi Beyene Tsegei clocked 2 hours, 19 minutes, and 41 seconds to win the men's and women's races, respectively, at the Standard Chartered Dubai Marathon in the United Arab Emirates on Friday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. After almost 2 months of clashes between Oromo protesters and security forces in Ethiopia, authorities have scrapped a master plan that would have expanded the boundaries of Addis Ababa and, according to protesters, would have displaced Oromo farmers. However, observers are divided on the significance of the move by Ethiopia and whether it truly represents a change of policy or just a reaction to negative publicity. That is it for this Monday, January 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou and her guest Carolyn Miles, President and CEO of Save the Children US, discussing Ethiopia's drought and children's hunger and other challenges. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by the phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.